Jonathan David. He's in all alone. Jonathan David. Jonathan David. It's the Iceman in the hot, hot heat of San Salvador. Number 20 for Canada's number 20. And 25. Again, 2-0.
Good morning, it's the Fan Morning Show. Sports F59 The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. I got a bit of a broken brain this morning. I don't know what's going on. We're trying to piece it together. So bear with me. Old broken brain is gonna try to do a show today. I love that I don't even, it's not just that I wasn't at, or that I was at the game last time, but I get so excited when Canada scores goals that I don't even really hear the call. And so that was the first time I registered that call. And lucky, lucky, lucky them that they got that crowd noise back. Did you guys? Because early in the game, we got the classic, oh boy, this game is in right. They're not there. They're, mm-hmm. This is in El Salvador. They didn't go. They didn't send anybody down there. We lost the feed. We lost the sound. And those poor souls are trying to call a game from a studio somewhere with no fans. And you can't leave any dead air, right? You can't leave any dead space. Calling a game, how did announcers do that with no fans? How the hell do they do it? I don't understand how it's even possible. A soccer game with no sound, though, not even just like the ambience of a place, was, I think, one of the hardest things I've ever heard. And one of the hardest things I've ever witnessed anyone try to do.
I haven't thought about how different it's been for commentators, like pandemic wise. Like, I knew that, like, a lot of the hockey commentators have been just doing it from through a screen,
oh, yeah,
which must suck. You don't get the energy of like, oh yeah, and then like, you know, the crowd's picking up this momentum, and then something's gonna happen. You're just making it yourself. So I think soccer is probably one of the hardest. You're right.
Especially a game like that where that El Salvador crowd is, by awesome, all accounts, unbelievable, and you know, they're angry and they're feisty, and in a way that's adding to the game and the atmosphere. Like, I sat in with Matt and Jack for a broadcast when the Raptors were in the playoffs against the Nets.
I thought you were gonna say those soccer guys. I was like whoa,
no,
you have a different life.
What is going on?
Are you
here,
sir? Okay, yeah, back to your story.
But I mean,
sorry,
this was the angle though for sitting in on a Matt and Jack broadcast in that Nets playoff series was, what is it like to call a game in a pandemic? What is everything going into this? And those are two guys obviously who feed off the energy of a crowd big time, and the adjustment there. So I can only imagine for soccer, especially like with a game that carried that much weight, but with, and between two teams that like clearly don't like each other,
it was hilarious. It was so awkward, those 2 or 3 minutes that those guys didn't have the sound of the crowd were some of the worst television I've ever seen in my life. And I felt for them. I was like, please get the sound back for these guys. They can't do this for the full 90. You got to just give them the night off. You got to call it. Everyone's just got to agree, we're not watching this game, or we're watching it with no sound. One of the two. That's the only options you get.
It reminded me of before, like, artists got tech savvy. They, like, a lot of the, like, freestyles that you'd hear or download or get on, like, Hot New Hip Hop or whatever, just, like, were the actual song with the vocals turned down a little bit because they didn't know how to sound mix.
Oh,
so it reminds me of, like, there's some, like, Gareth Wheeler's at home, and he's like, I could do a better job broadcasting this game than the person on TV. And so he turns the volume down on his TV and commentates over top of it. That's what it sounded like to me.
So I'm so glad you brought up old stuff because, okay. Before we really break this game down, before we do Canada's Quest presented by Certain Teat, I want to talk about some old stuff. I have two gripes with Ailish. One, I woke up this morning. I don't know what the time of this tweet was, but I looked at Ailish's Twitter feed this morning. And so Canada, the women's hockey team, won 12-1 last night, which is a pretty aggressive score. Which sure, but it's also pretty aggressive that we're beating countries 12-1 in the Olympics. Feels a little bullyish, but it's okay. You got to do what you got to do. The Swiss ladies knew what they were stepping on the ice for. They're living their Olympic dream. That's your dream, is to have this happen. Boy. But Number two is I saw it, Bing Bong Canada. Like, at what point was that 8-1, 9-1, where you're like in their face? Are you part of the baddies as well? Are you part of the bully gang? Like, when are you tweeting Bing Bong?
It was 6 hours ago, apparently.
Goal 9? Goal 10?
I don't even know.
You seemed really fired up for Canada beating the living crap out of
the Swiss.
You know
what? I think that was a joint tweet about the Canada soccer team winning, Canada hockey winning. I think it just Canada just came out of me. I couldn't control it. My fingers went straight to the keyboard and boom, Bing Bong Canada. But yeah, I was. I did not stay up to watch the full game. Like, not gonna lie and pretend I did. No thanks.
You didn't?
No, I did not do that.
If you are living on the East Coast and you stayed up for all of Canada beating
you
the
must
Swiss
have
team.
A child on the ice.
Yeah, yeah. You have to have a direct blood relative. And I'm not talking about a second cousin. Direct blood. This is the
you
only way.
You birthed that child.
Yes, yes. Well, that's 1,000% yes. That is not healthy behavior. It's
well,
not
I will
healthy
say,
behavior.
Their next couple games, Finland, Friday night at 11 p.m., I'll be watching that one, you know?
Okay.
Don't have to sleep in. I don't have to get up early. Finland's a huge game. It starts at 11 p.m. Huge game. Finland's a huge game. And
no,
then,
I know.
But
I have
Sunday night, 11 p.m., yeah. Sunday night at 11 p.m.? Nah, I don't know about that one. But then Monday night, 11 p.m. against USA. So just going to write off Tuesday. Text line Tuesday is going to be me texting in from my bed.
This is a tease for our Wake and Rake later, which once again, winner, winner, chicken dinner. Another parlay victory. Just nonstop hits from the Beatles of sports gambling who just continue to give you hit after hit after hit after hit. And yesterday, pretty sure. Actually, I'm not even pretty sure. I'm 100% sure. Because we had some crybaby in the chat about how it's not good enough picks for him. All of them were against the spread yesterday. So, crybaby, whatever. Goodbye.
I have some numbers later for Jordan from Saga if he really wants
them.
Oh, you
kept them. The name. Ooh. Wow. You
Jordan from Saga.
He's going to get body bagged with some numbers at 8:30.
Jordy. He's listening.
Yes, Wake and Rake hits again, but during the Wake and Rake, Ailish, I have bad news for you and your narrative that Finland is a tough out for teams. But yes, back to why I'm mad at you, back to old stuff, back to other things. Okay, so Blake, yesterday I sent Ailish a GIF of Chris Farley, and she didn't know who it was. And this is not just a thing where... this is not just a one-off thing where, it's just Ailish doesn't know something. It's not because she's up to date on everything. Like, for guys our age, Chris Farley is beyond iconic, right? Like, if you're going to say for us growing up things that were cool, like, you're putting in things in the 90s. I would say Chris Farley is Nirvana level of comedy stuff. You know? It's huge. So, but this isn't the... We all know, you know, I've gone on the odd date, right, with some people that are a bit younger than I am. This has come up with me before. Chris Farley, somewhere along the line, Chris Farley stuff stops, and it's just not a part of younger person culture at all. There's no – how do you not know – she goes, he's dead, right? That's all. She goes, that guy, he's dead, right? That was – she asked if it was Jack Black, first of all. That was her first question, which sent me into an emotional tailspin. I didn't know what to do. I had to put my phone down. I had to breathe. I had to say, hey, she's almost 10 years younger than you. You need to just remember that – you're
he did kind of look like Jack Black in like
he did not kind of look like Jack Black
in
at all. No, he
like,
did it. Oh my
yeah,
god,
he
Blake,
did.
Why? So I need to theorize here with you just so quickly before we get back into Canada soccer. Why Chris Farley hasn't lasted longer? Because it all holds up. All of Chris Farley's work holds up. There's nothing that you can go back on. And I was thinking about it yesterday. It's all still good.
So there are a couple things here. First of all, which was it, the through the table or the Colombian decaf coffee crystals gif?
No, it was Tommy Boy. Oh, come on, pulling the hair, you know?
Gotcha.
Because that's what Ailish does. She makes me frustrated to the point of Tommy Boy lighting cars on fire and freaking out on sales. Yeah.
It's great. We can also, once we're back in studio and everyone can see us for the first time, I can do the fat guy in a little coat one because none of my clothes are going to fit.
She doesn't know any of this stuff. She doesn't know any of what you're talking about right now.
So the big thing is Chris Farley died when you and I were 11, JD. Yeah. So this is like Chris Farley is even – his stuff is grandfathered into us. Like we didn't get Chris Farley humor at like 9 or 10 years old, I don't think.
Yeah, but Blake, you know who John Belushi is.
I know, but I'm answering your question.
Sorry, I'm still mad at Ailish. I'm sorry. I'm not ready for this. I thought I was ready.
That is one. And I think that 1B to that is that when we were younger, Saturday Night Live was in like when we're a teenager or college or whatever, Saturday Night Live was still relevant enough that you would watch old Saturday Night Lives or you would see clips from it or whatever. But Saturday Night Live now is in the tank so badly, and there's not really, like, short of some of the Lonely Island stuff, there's really not a lot from our era of Saturday Night Live for younger people to go back to. The other thing is that because all of his peers, I think, didn't pass away at 33 and have continued to make movies together and stuff, like, I'm sure Ailish knows who, like, Chris Rock and Adam Sandler and David Spade are.
Very much
and
so.
Though that was, like, the core – that was, like, the group that they came up with. And I don't know that – like Chris Farley would have been in all the Kevin James roles if – Chris Farley were still alive and Adam Sandler and like that, the Happy Madison productions still needed a chubby guy for physical comedy. So I think those are the two reasons why.
So obviously Ailish gave Blake money this morning to do just, the Blake's analytical defense of you, because all of that stuff that he just said is okay. I hear some of it, but there's no excuse. I don't care. Chris Farley is an icon. Chris Farley is one of the funniest human beings who ever walked the face of the earth. And if you have one iota of respect for the genre, then you know who Chris Farley is. And so, Ailish, I am going to be this guy. You have to watch a Chris Farley movie this weekend.
Okay.
You have to. You have to watch Tommy Boy. I don't care if you have to pay for it. Out of your own pocket. I'll pay for it. I don't care. You can bill me. Yeah, I'll pay you for it. I'll happily pay you to watch Tommy Boy. Happily. And you come away and I want a Tommy Boy review from you. And you tell
Monday
me
morning,
that doesn't
I'll give
hold
you
up.
One.
That's right. You better believe it. And I don't care how
it's
old
$4.99 to rent on Apple TV, so I'll bill you.
Truly the best $4.99 you can spend.
Oh,
truly.
Actually, I can get it for $3.99 through Amazon Prime, so I'll save you a buck.
Wow, classic Amazon, just undercutting the competition yet again. Way to go. Okay, so that aside. Now
glad you got that off your chest.
Now we can do the real things. Thank you. You have no defense. You just
I have one more thing.
I just took it.
Yeah. JD, you put in the doc just the initial CF, and I texted you. I was like, what the heck is this about? And I was like, last night I was thinking, I'm like, who is CF? Who is CF? And Chris Farley.
I didn't want to spoil it.
I know. Chris Farley is so large in, like, my appreciation of comedy from when I was younger that it was literally the only name I could think of that had the initial CF.
Yeah. I honestly thought you might be able to guess it when I said she doesn't know who CF is. I really did. I thought that might be too much, but I needed to bring it up today because this has happened more than once to me now where people don't know who Chris Farley is, and it bothers me. And I thought that Adam Sandler doing the Celebration of Chris Farley song the last couple of years went viral enough that the youths would...
Maybe I do know the song.
Adam Sandler sang a song. I don't know how
it actually goes. Well, clearly you're not a fan then.
Yeah, I'm not really a big Adam Sandler fan, but I know who he is, and I've seen all his movies. Okay, so this look at the Canadian men's soccer team is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. So it's time for Canada's Quest, presented by CertainTeed. Another huge win. And that one, I don't know about you guys, pretty early in that contest last night, I felt like this isn't that important for Canada. Who cares? Just get out of here with a draw. They looked pretty gassed. They didn't have their A squad in. The substitutions Herdman made were crucial for that win. I was glad that he did it because it felt important once they were in the moment, once they were in the second half, to get those extra 2 points. But incredible window for Canada. All 9 points. All 9 points. They went to the House of Horrors in Honduras. They beat the guys with the ugliest kits on planet Earth, the Big H. They go home.
An H on it.
You got to pop an H on it, and that's enough for making a jersey. Then they go home. They beat the United States in what was a Canadian heritage moment, essentially. Dwayne De Rosario gets so drunk after the game, he can't remember what day of the week it is when he does our show. And then last night, they go on tired legs, third game, all the travel. God, did the broadcast bring up the travel. Did you know they traveled? They brought up like 35 times in that game.
The every only time team was... in CONCACAF traveling.
Yeah, I know, that travel. Like, oh, the poor travelers. But in the humidity, everything. And then they get what made this just feel like the dumbest run ever. The goal off of the back of the head that spins into the net. I got to say, that... there are certain things that I know I'm never going to forget, right? I know I'm never going to forget certain things in sports when I'm a little old man and I've shrunk down and I'm just mad that the young people don't know who my favorite comedy icons are. I'll remember that goal. That goal is a I'll remember it till the day I die goal. That's going to be on every single highlight compilation that there is for weird things that happen in sporting events. That's going to be there for Canada. That's going to be there on television, highlight reels, whatever we go into forever and ever and ever.
Can I pitch a name for that goal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We've had the hand of God in soccer, the ass of God.
But it didn't hit his butt.
It did. If you look at the still frame, yeah, there's a Getty picture where it very much looks like it hit him in the arse.
So
the arse.
I had old Ben Ennis yesterday was at my place. We watched the game together, and we got into a heated argument as to where the ball went off his body, and we broke it down frame by frame by frame multiple times. And if you're telling me it did go off his butt, then this is a thrilling development for me because I argued butt. And I was pretty conclusively turned wrong and was agreed to unanimously that I was wrong. Because it looks like it goes off the defender where it looks as though it's a careening for his butt. And then defender and then head and then in the net. I know. I'm as disappointed as you are.
I'll investigate further.
Hey, I'm on your side. I just want you to know I'm on your side. I want you to be right. If you end up being right, if someone has a Getty image still photo of it going directly off the butt, then this is a huge victory for me in my war against Ben Ennis. So, and we will call him to tell him that we have this proof. Like, that's yeah, how
get him on
that's
the
how petty this
so here's
will
be. The issue. I just sent you a photo in the chat here. Yeah. And from that angle, it very much looks like it's hitting him in the butt.
It does.
But I know. I know.
If you turn the camera 180 degrees, is it maybe hitting off the defender's foot and said, we don't have the alternate angle?
Blake, I already used that as evidence in my defense for the off the butt.
What do we have video review for, if not to find out which body part this went off of?
Exactly.
We're trying to name an iconic butt goal or maybe back of the head goal. This is the time for VR.
So this is what I want to bring up with you guys today, though, because the game itself was pretty sloppy. The pitch was bad. The El Salvadorian team has a bunch of drama ahead of time that made me put even more money down on Team Canada to win this thing because I had to figure it was going to impact them in some way. It's not a full crowd of El Salvadorian fans who were going nuts. Boy, do they chuck a can down there. Like, they get it down to the pitch. You better put up higher fences in El Salvador because the boys
right
chucking
here.
Cans, the boys chucking cans are getting them through. It was pretty low event. El Salvador had a few moments where they had some real chances, and boy, they were sloppy with their opportunities. Other than maybe that one moment where it probably should have been a foul against Canada in the box. Let's never talk about that again. But either way, it wasn't a high event game. It was pretty low event. For a long portion of it, both teams playing for the draw. But this is what I came away thinking. When we go into these next three games, the final three games, I hope that everyone kind of realizes that this is our World Cup. This is our World Cup. It's never going to be this good again. People were talking to me about, like, I was with a couple friends last night. I'm with Ben, and I realized...
Yeah, we get it. Blake, you have friends.
But this gets back to Blake's innocent climb thing, where the Canadian soccer program hasn't lost. They haven't lost in a CONCACAF window. They just took three wins in three games, one of which was against the United States. The next time Canada Soccer has to come back for qualifyings, they're going to have hiccups. there's going to be a moment where we say, boy, that was a bad loss, mm-hmm. or boy, that was a bad result, and man, this one stinks, and blah, blah, blah. This is perfection. This is our World Cup. And beating the United States, there's no shame in that. Beating the United States and beating Mexico and going to Azteca and getting a draw and outplaying them at Azteca, this stuff is not going to become the norm, okay? And mm-hmm. I think that there's a bit of a danger in expecting it to be this way or thinking that this is now the bar or that this is what we're going to be forever and ever and ever. Is the program in a better place? Yes. Should we be excited? Should there be more pressure on them moving forward? Yes. Did they overcome pressure to make sure that they're getting this results? All those things are true. But this is as good as it's ever going to get in our lifetime when it comes to Canada soccer, in my opinion. It's hard to envision us winning a World Cup, okay? I think that we should kind of understand that Mexico and United States don't go down and win World Cups, and that the Mexican program is down a little bit right now. This is amazing. This is a real moment. This is a real moment for this sport that we should all really cherish. And now we're back into old guy talk, getting mad about Chris Farley and making sure that you live in the moment and cherish it. But I really do think that this is our World Cup. This is our moment as a country to come around soccer and to feel differently about this. And I just hope people appreciate that a little bit, because it really did settle with me last night.
Little bit of context here. So Mexico has made a lot of World Cups. Everyone since they were banned in 1990 and disqualified, they haven't finished better than 10th. So right. that's a bar for you there. And they're probably, you know, historically the strongest from this zone. The U.S. has not had a ton of success there either. They didn't qualify last time, and then they finished as high as 8th in 2002, which is just making the quarterfinals. CONCACAF is not as strong as UEFA. Like, this isn't a bold take here. You look and Panama made it in 2018 and got outscored 11-2 over their 3 losses. So that is the comparison point, and that's who you're going up against. And yeah, Canada's come a long way. They're still 40th in FIFA rankings. I'd expect that to go up by the time the World Cup starts, but
there should be a bar by World Cup time. Yeah,
top 25.
They're going to be top 25 come World Cup time. That's pretty much the consensus amongst soccer people. Like, myself.
Yeah, if it works at all similar to like the FIFA ranking system. it's a good point. I still think there's obviously plenty of room for optimism, excitement, because like maybe you go and maybe hey, the moment's too big or the jump in competition is too much, but then you look ahead and you already know you're going next time too. And then you start to think, I think, you know, you said our lifetime. Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. Maybe it's, you know, I think the next goal after making it is, hey, within the next couple World Cups, you want to get out of the group stage. It's not win the World Cup. It's make a little noise is the next step.
I just don't think that that'll be as big of a deal, honest to God, as beating the United States at home. This is it. This is the one. This is the sweetest it's ever going to feel. It dawned on me, boy, let me be wrong. But Milan Borjan won't be around for the World Cup window when it's here. I think he's 35 years old or 36 years old. It's pretty unlikely that he's the goaltender of the future. Atiba Hutchinson will not be around for the next World Cup window. Yes, will there be new Canadian stars? And will some of the younger players then become veterans and will know more of the team go on down the line? Of course. But I just keep thinking about the innocent climb that Blake talks all the time about. How the rise is always the most fun part. This is just also the most perfect part. It's probably never going to happen again where Canada goes without a loss in qualifying. And
I think it was the first time that's
games.
Ever actually happened for anybody in CONCACAF.
So there you go. Exactly.
So first for everything, but tough to one up that next time.
This is just so special. This is so, so special. And I just don't want it to get skewed with, well, now Canada needs to win a World Cup someday for us to, because we're not going to win a World Cup someday. Maybe in the future of,
so
you know,
you're saying
in the year 3006. It's probably never going to happen. We're probably never going to win a World Cup. And so I just don't know what the next bar is. So you're right, Blake. Okay. Getting out of the group stage would be a great accomplishment. I still don't know if it's ever going to feel as this moment does right now with Canada soccer. For me, anyways, this is it. I think this is it.
Well, it's also coming off of the women's gold medal, right? So
yeah,
it's I know that we tend to section off the men's program from the women's program, but you know, as a soccer nation, it's hard to it's going to be hard to top a cycle in which you win an Olympic gold medal and on the women's side and qualify for the first time in 35 years on the men's side. So,
but the women have been good for a long time now, right?
I know,
said
I'm
the
just
take
saying
yesterday
that
about Herdman leaves, and I hate his guts because he goes from the winners to the losers, and all that men's program had ever done was lose and disappoint, and lose and disappoint, and lose and disappoint over and over and over again, and all of a sudden they are this unifying force in the country. That's the other cool part about this that I'm loving so much and that I'm a little pissed off about when it comes to us making our first World Cup in my lifetime anyways, is that the first World Cup we get is a Winter World Cup in Qatar. It's not we're getting all to go down to watch games on College Street together as a country where we're all celebrating Canada. Soccer in this country, World Cups in this country, it's not that they're divisive, because I think people here are pretty respectful of one another when it comes to being from other places. Not everybody, but for the vast majority. You go down to college during a World Cup, and everyone's rooting for different teams, and everyone's got their different countries' flags. I would have loved to see what it would have been like with Canada in a World Cup. What it would have looked like downtown Toronto.
If you're a real fan, JD, you'll be out there in your little parka with your little flag.
We'll see if
you're a real fan by November.
You will, and I will be a real fan, and I will be going out.
Will you do tarps off? That's what you said last time, and you didn't do it.
I can't be making promises anymore about tarps off after I disgraced. I am going to make it up to people with an excruciating tarps off at some point. Obviously, I will. Like, I have to. There's going to come a time. But doesn't that I don't like undercutting this with that look forward, but that is a crappy thing. I'm sorry, it is. That our first World Cup is going to be wintertime, weird Qatar in that stadium that God knows how many people died building. It's just, that's a greasy place. That place is cursed. That's a haunted place. There's going
to
be...
I don't know the storyline behind the building of this stadium, but I will have to look into it at the break.
Don't look into it, because it's not good.
It's not an A-list segment, is what you're saying.
It is not an A-list segment.
Okay.
You will not find a lot of positives coming out of how Qatar got the World Cup. Let's just put it this way. I don't think that there's a lot of positive stories. Anyways, people enjoy it. I'm just thrilled. What a night again last night. And then to close it off, the touch by David. Wow. Just wow. What a player. He's certainly going to end up as Canada's top goal scorer. We're celebrating Kyle Larin right now, but David is going to scream past all these dudes.
Yeah, and he's 22 years old, man. It's there's a long time. And this is, if there's room for optimism about Canada's ability to sustain this, it's that they might have the two best players in CONCACAF and four or five of the top 10 if you're breaking down top individual men's players in the zone. Mm-hmm. So that's an exciting thing. But again, the CONCACAF has just not been a prominent player when it comes to World Cup time. Five top eight finishes ever as a zone, and their best finish was back in 1930, so I'm not sure we're counting that. You want clinch scenarios before we wrap up the...
Don't they have to get one point?
We're clinched, yeah, we're clinched.
Yeah, that's... so the absolute worst case for Canada, and I broke it down by game, what would have to happen... across Canada, Panama, the U.S., and Mexico. I won't lay it all out, but there is one possible iteration where Canada lands in fourth and they have to go to the Inter-Confederation playoffs and try to get in that way. The magic number, assuming most tiebreakers don't dramatically switch, is one. You need a draw. You need Panama to lose.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, it was very clear. And I was glad that they, again, actually went for it last night with those three substitutions, because... No offense to number 9 and number 9's family on Team Canada last night. Please don't ever make me watch number 9 again. I can't do it. I can't do
Who's
it.
Number 9?
Number 9 was someone who felt like the old Canada soccer program, not
That's
the new.
That's the worst chirp when you like you just call someone their number. Like you don't even know. Like you're just like, what's up, number 9? That's a gut punch.
It just, number 9 was not doing it for me at all. He was... rough. There's just Hey, number nine, it's not your fault because I'm so used to the other guys on the team now playing with incredible speed, right? That's one of the highlights of the Canadian national program is they've got speed, they've got goal scorers, they've got finishers, they've got real talent up at the front. They've got guys who are clutch. Nine was not it. Like, it was tough. It was tough. I was riding nine last night, and I obviously bet on Canada soccer as well, but I am a Patriot, and I wanted them to go for it. I thought, why not try to collect these 3 points? This El Salvadorian team is clearly vulnerable. They're not playing very well. There's an opportunity to score here. And then, boom, John Herdman does it. The triple sub puts in the three studs, puts in Laren, puts in, I think it was Alistair Johnson, and... who am I missing from that list of who got put in? I can't remember who the third person was, but he puts them all in, takes out Osorio, who's gassed, and he took out number nine, and Canada goes and ends up winning the damn thing. Awesome. Awesome, awesome result. I'm really, really proud of them, and I hope, again, people just enjoy this sucker and really soak it in. Anything else?
Liam Millar, by the way, is number nine.
Oh, Liam.
Hey, I wasn't going to sewer him with his name. I did know it was Liam. I didn't know... because I was yelling, come on, Liam, all night. Or it was like,
number nine.
Please, stop doing it, number nine. This look at the Canadian men's national team was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. I want to take a break. We got to come back and do the A-list. But I want to pose a question for today because it's going up in my Take It or Leave It this afternoon on Instagram. I think there's pressure on the Raptors. I think that there's actually pressure now on this team to make a trade this week. We're now a week removed from the NBA trade deadline. They play the Chicago Bulls tonight. The Bulls, I believe, are in first place now, correct? Blake, they've been going up and down, back and forth, but they're back in first place. And my case is the Chicago Bulls being a one seed is very Toronto Raptors being a one seed from 2016 and 2017, where, hey, you're a good basketball team. You're a good story, but you're not an unbeatable juggernaut. There's no one really in the Eastern Conference right now that scares me. The Raptors have an opportunity here to beat the number two seed in the Miami Heat and then go beat the number one seed in the Chicago Bulls. I really do believe that they have a good chance to win tonight. And it's a realization that the East is really open this year. And all of a sudden, I'm very curious about what the window is and how to capitalize on a window that involves Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet playing as good as they've ever played. And so, something for the listeners today. And you can fire it away. You can hit it up in the text, 590-590. You can hit it up in the comments section once Take It or Leave It goes up today, which I would really appreciate. And, of course, like, share, review, follow, all those different things. But this has now shifted from, hey, the Raptors, we don't know what direction they're taking, to the Raptors are a fun story and there's a lot of positives, to all of a sudden, this week, which is very, very quick, me saying, you not only should trade that first round pick, you not even should try to consider that, you gotta figure out a way to add to this team.
At least for our sake, I want to hear some fun, some trades. I want to have some new blood. I want to have something to talk about. I want to know what the Raptors are doing. And that's, I think, the biggest conversation we've had all year is like, are they all in? Are they going to tank? Are they going to make the playoffs? What is the Messiah jury plan? And I think that we need to know that this week or next.
There's nothing worse as content creators than a dry trade deadline. So I'm with you guys. And I think, I don't know if pressure is the word that I would use, but I look ahead and I kind of came to this through, you know, doing my trade deadline primer, doing the all your trade ideas are bad thing, looking ahead at what the cap sheet looks like next year and what the free agent class looks like next year. This Goran Dragic contract, and I know everyone's been annoyed with the situation, but if you attach an asset to that, that is basically, short of trading a core piece, your only means of adding a salary larger than, say, $10 or $11 million within the next 18 months, because you're going to be capped out this summer. You're going to be far enough below the luxury tax that you don't mind spending the full mid-level and stuff like that, and you have a small trade exception, but you can't add that stuff together. The highest guy you're getting at that, like, that's the tier Serge Ibaka got when he left, or the tier that, you know, gets you a CJ Miles. We're not talking about ceiling changing guys. We're talking about nice pieces. So you don't have a path to get anyone higher than that. Dragic plus an asset is your best way to not only fortify this roster for this run here, where maybe the opportunity to make a run that's more than just the playing game is there in the East, but it's also the best way to jumpstart your shopping for next year, where Van Vliet and Siakam are in their age 29 seasons. So Scottie Barnes isn't a rookie anymore. And who knows with the East, because Philly's never going to pull the trigger and try to maximize around Embiid. The Nets guys are old. We know how things can happen and how things can change quickly. So, yeah, I think they want to add. I think they should add. I think it should be looked at least an 18-month view kind of thing, like not a rental, but someone who can help now and help next year. We got a week. We'll talk to Michael Grange about it a little bit later. We got a loaded show again today. We got Maurice Jones-Drew, my favorite football player, coming up at 7. Grange at 8, Justin Cuthbert at 9. And we'll talk a little more Canada soccer with Craig Forrest at 9:30 as well. Before we get to all that, though, we're going to do the A-list. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back to that. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Woo! It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, and that artist that we're brought in with. Her name is Anitta. She's a Brazilian pop star. Did you recognize that track?
I did not. I thought for sure this was something to do with El Salvador, and like
it is not.
Okay, so what's the what are we?
I'll
doing
tell
here?
You. Let's get okay. Right into the A list.
Now it's time for the A list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So, Anitta, a beautiful looking Brazilian pop star. She was on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. There's a sports connection here. And she's talking about traveling and, you know, the Super Bowl upcoming. And somehow they get into predictions of some sort. And she is backing the Bengals big time. And if you needed another reason to back the Bengals, which I am definitely all in on the Bengals, she basically gives a guarantee that they're going to win. And Vic has the clip for us.
I know they're going to win because I'm going to make sure he has a great night and he's going to win next day.
There you can go.
Bet all your money.
There you go.
The clip is much longer, but she basically guarantees that she has a man on the team, unnamed man on the team.
I was going to say, who was it? Who is she referring to? Is this Joe
she
Burrow?
Doesn't,
is Joe
she Cole? Doesn't tell. She doesn't say. She just brings it up that she's got a man on the Bengals that she's going to be seeing the night before the game, and he's going to have a great night, and that she guarantees that they will win the game. So if you needed another betting incentive, there it is.
Now I'm back. It's been a while since I've gone the other way on the A-list, and now finally it's back. I'm back all the way. I am of the age still where, you know, the night before the game is supposed to be sacred and not for that. And so you're telling me that the Brazilian pop star, I don't even need to see what she looks like. She's obviously just out of this world hot. That she's showing up to one of my Bengals players and before the night before the game, and she's saying he's going to have a good night, means he's not sleeping at all. He's going to have the worst night. This guy's going to be completely depleted. He's going to have nothing in the tank, literally. And he's not going to perform well. The Bengals are dead. The Bengals are toast. I need the name of this player. This guy better be special teams, because if it's Joe Burrow,
it's Boyd.
That's tough. Tyler Boyd's too important. Tyler
his
Boyd's too important.
Receiving yards
team.
Is under 39 and a half.
Oh, my God. Poor Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd now has to make sure that there are photos of this woman not in L.A. during the game. That she has to be in a different – she got to go back to Brazil. Like, she has to go back to Brazil, because that's the only way that if anything happens to Tyler Boyd now in this game, he drops a pass. He does anything that is not good. He's dead on the internet. He is internet dead because every Bengals fan is going to meme him out of existence with this Brazilian pop star.
The only reason that we think it's not confirmed as Tyler Boyd, but Vic just did some digging. And it's
you trust
the
Vic?
This is the only player she follows on the Bengals. So, like, I mean, put it together, right? She's a pop star. She's not following a bunch of athletes. She's following Tyler Boyd. I think that we feel pretty certain that it's him. I'd give it a 90% chance that it's that individual, but okay, there is a
analytics on percentage of stats. Brazilian pop star banging Tyler Boyd.
You want the analytics? I got the analytics. No, three quick things on this. One, Bengals Reddit thinks it's Tyler Boyd as well.
Okay. I love that you're already on Bengals Reddit.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, I know.
What, you thought you guys were going to talk about this for 3 minutes and I wasn't going to have the answer by the time you finished?
True.
Yes.
Two, JD, your point, the boxing term is weak legs, right? And that's in the entire lead up to the fight. It's nothing. Yeah. You don't want weak legs. You want that aggression there.
But maybe it would help relieve some stress, some anxiety.
The theory goes, at least in boxing, that you want that tension because it's such a physical, aggressive sport. The third thing is her explaining to Jimmy Fallon as part of that interview basically what a roster is, because
she refers
to him as one of my men, and the reaction is kind of like, what? And then she has to explain that she travels a lot. She's got to have options. So her putting the idea of a roster on the national radar for, I assume,
good for her.
I assume a Tonight Show skews a little older in demographics. So,
Blake, now we're doing the opposite here, where we started the show with things that the youths don't understand, good comedy movies, because comedy movies are dead for young people. Again, tell me the last time there was a comedy movie that a young person would have on their dorm room wall. It's non-existent. They're done. Comedy movies are done. Now, for the olds, dating has changed. There is now rosters. It's no longer your one option anymore. It's no longer your beau. It's no longer going to the prom with your one-on-one. It's about rosters. And people openly speak about their rosters in front of other people that they're trying to court. This is a reality of the situation. So this probably broke old Jimmy Fallon's brain into a million pieces as he was learning this on the spot. And the rest of his audience, who is probably age... 45 median? I don't know. Who's watching late night shows anymore? Not I. It feels too old for me, and I'm old as dirt. So, rosters. Congratulations to
what
the olds learning about rosters.
Median listening age of the Fan morning show? Do you think people listening right now would be on team roster or team, I don't know what that means, or do they believe
people
that
are hardworking Canadians listen to this show, all right? They don't know about rosters. They're out here grinding. They're out there going to their job early in the morning.
Grinding.
That's what I mean. The podcast listeners probably know what rosters are because they're waking up later. They're on their own time. I'm choosing this. This is about choice and multiple selections. I have all kinds of different options. If you're listening to Fan Morning Show on radio, it's just the one option you have. This is it. This is what you get for sports talk right now. You don't know anything about rosters. You're loyal. You're faithful. You believe in tradition. That's who you are. Podcast? Rosters. Multitude of things. Maybe the Fan Morning Show today. What are they talking about today? Flavor of the week. Blah, 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 blah.
Wow. We'll circle back on this next Friday during the Wake and Rake when we're picking our Super Bowl bets to see if we're going to go all in on Tyler Boyd or not because of Anita.
No. Keep Anita away from Tyler Boyd. Keep Anita away from Tyler.
Tyler Boyd, I'm going to need to see your roster spreadsheet. You're not cap compliant. You cannot fit Anita onto the roster in the next 2 weeks. You got no more cap space between now and the Super Bowl.
So let's move on. That was a fun one, though. Thank you. Please text in any responses about this that you may have. So it's NBA trade. It's NBA trade deadline approaching. Yeah. And a small boy, a little child... You'll Are we talking about voice?
Is Ish you know you're allowed
the
to
Raptors?
Prepare.
What's going on
you,
here?
You know you're allowed to prepare for the A-list ahead of time, right?
It's more
you don't
fun
need to
when
just
I don't.
Reading things off the top of your head, coming to your feed.
You know,
a small
Mark,
boy. Yeah,
Mark
okay.
Cuban. Mark Cuban. We know him. And he was being interviewed by a small boy at Wharton, which is a school in the United States. And
was it just a boy, or was it a particularly small boy that you had just, to like, throw this in?
He sounds like a small, innocent child.
Well, okay. Wharton is a business school.
I understand.
Okay,
yes,
so this is
he's
either...
not a just. Let's just play the tape,
he,
and then you
he,
can
is it the boss?
You can
baby?
Judge.
Howard,
you can judge. He sounds quite
boy.
Young. Vic, play the tape.
Play the tape, Vic.
It's been about a year since Seth Curry was traded away to the 76ers for Josh Richardson and Tyler Bay. So, if somebody who's like in Philly team. Now, I have to ask: looking back on this trade, how do you think it went? Do the Mavs have kept Seth Curry?
I hate you. Next question.
So there's then there he's a small boy, but
that
the,
sounds like a that sounds like a teenager at least. That's 13.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
13
he's
years old.
He's a small boy.
Student. He's a college student.
Anyway, so the whole story behind this is he asks Mark Cuban if he regrets the Seth Curry trade. He goes, "I hate you." Next question, and I guess I just wanted to put this in the A-list because we are approaching the NBA trade deadline, and I thought it would spark some conversations about bad trades in retrospect when we look back, and that is definitely one of them. And I assume that you might have more. It might get your thoughts going. It might get the listeners intrigued. It might spark some dialogue. But Mark Cuban is not happy about it, and he was not thrilled with this small boy asking him this question during an interview.
I have to do this, Blake. Every time she says it, it reminds me of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Baby boy, little boy, that's you. That's you doing that song.
I need you, boy. You,
yeah. So there's that. Two, poor 13-year-old kids who, you know, young boy would meet Ailish like that. A 13-year-old probably have a crush because young guys always have crushes on older women. And
Women?
Yeah, that's right. To a 13-year-old, you are. What? You're not? You're the same age?
I don't like to be
and
called
you,
that.
You immediately undercutting the poor kid with a crush of, oh, look at this little boy asking a question as they're trying to be 13. There's nothing you want more than respect from adults and to feel as though you're their age. You've just shattered all 13-year-old, 13 to 15-year-old demographic of the show is shattered.
I don't want 13-year-old Sibs in the DM.
No, one said in the DM, just can they be fans of the show? The show is for everyone. That is, that's an all-time look back at that team, though, the Mavs. Of all the things that they needed to change about their team, Seth Curry was dead last. Truly. Blake, you tell me. Who would you want removed from that Mavericks roster around Luka Doncic less than Seth Curry from the last three seasons?
Look, I have a... Yeah, you're right. And the Mavericks are 24th in three-point shooting despite having maybe the guy who creates threes for... Yeah. His teammates better than anyone in the league. Like Doncic is like peak John Wall levels of, if you just stand in the corner, I will get you good looks there. So, and not only that, but Dallas has had Seth Curry twice. They had him in 2016, 2017, saw him go to Portland, got him back. Then he's off to Philly for Tyler Bay and Josh Richardson, which would be fine on its own, but they then later turned around and flipped Josh Richardson. The Seth Curry one's tough because I do my like annual buy low free agent targets for the Raptors every summer, and there were like 3 years in a row where I was like, Seth Curry. And now he makes way too much money. He's completely priced himself out. I mean, he makes $8 million. It's not crazy, but he's no longer in the buy low category. Yeah, it's a huge mistake. And it's actually like the biggest flaw in Dallas's roster is they've actually cobbled together a pretty good defense around this team. and they don't have the shooting you need to complement Luka Doncic.
So before we break, I will just say this, Ailish. When you ask me what are the biggest trade deadline mistakes, it's funny because my brain obviously goes to Raptors first. And as I'm thinking about the Raptors, their legacy for the longest time, especially with Masai, was this team doesn't make trades. Blake, you tell me if I'm wrong. Basically, all we have in Raptors team history that I can remember anyways is, Blake, you just put in a doc Juan Dixon in because that was actually the joke was, was always this is the type of trade that the Raptors make at the deadline. But I think about Marc Gasol, obviously, because they just went out and got him to get the championship. So that's number one. And JYD. Those are the two moves at the deadline. I guess now you put Gary Trent Jr. into this conversation moving forward because mm-hmm. the Norm Powell thing happened. But that wasn't a supposed to be addition thing. That was supposed to be a selling Norm Powell thing, right?
So yeah, and also like a what we're talking about this deadline thing in terms of, hey, you're doing your adding. Business for next summer because then you have Trent's bird rights and Powell's a free agent anyway and stuff. The link
so
I put in there
them
is
ranked.
Just,
Who's with Gasol? Who's even in that category? JYD.
Well,
right?
it's not just deadline ones. It's all trades in Raptors history ranked. So the Gasol one actually came in at 11 out of. So this is before last year. So this was actually I did this during the pandemic or just before the pandemic actually. So the Gasol one came in at 11th at the time. 11th is too low.
Yeah, too low. I don't even.
But I mean, like you get into things like. You flipped John Sammons for Lou Williams and Bebe, and then, you know, you got Antonio Davis for free. You flipped two nobodies for Doug Christie.
No, Lou Williams and Bebe.
There's a lot
you
of deals
ahead
like
of Marc Gasol?
Well, it's because you gave up a lot in the Marc Gasol trade.
Who cares? They don't win a championship without Marc Gasol.
Right, but it's explained in the article.
Read the article.
An article that has Lou Williams ahead of Marc Gasol. I'll scrap that article. Peace out.
It's not an article of the best players they traded for.
It's Boo article.
Don't explain yourself. Yeah.
I mean, look, like it's hard to argue Gravis for the picks that became Norman Powell and OG Anunoby, right? Like it's hard to argue that that's not a better trade than the Gasol
now
one.
Now Gary Trent Jr. in a way.
Yeah. So, good A-list. Fun one.
I have multiple more that we can sprinkle in with throughout the show, so stay tuned.